Now here's the interesting part. As it turns out, the average number of items answered on the TIMSS questionnaire varies from country to country. It is possible, in fact, to rank all the participating countries according to how many items their students answer on the questionnaire. Now, what do you think happens if you compare the questionnaire rankings with the math rankings? They're almost exactly the same. In other words, countries whose students are willing to concentrate and sit still long enough and focus on answering every single question in an endless questionnaire are the same countries whose students do the best job of solving math problems. The person who discovered this fact is an educational researcher at the University of Pennsylvania named Erling Bow, and he stumbled across it by accident. It came out of the blue, he says. Bow hasn't even been able to publish his findings in a scientific journal because, he says, it's just a bit too weird. Remember, he's not saying that the ability to finish the questionnaire and to excel on the math test is related. He's saying that they're the same, that if you compare the two rankings, they are identical. Think about this another way. Imagine that every year there was a math Olympics in some fabulous city in the world, and every country in the world sent its own team of 1,000 eighth graders. Bo's point is that we could predict precisely the order in which every country would finish in the math Olympics without asking a single math question. All you'd have to do is to give them some task measuring how hard they were willing to work. In fact, we wouldn't even have to give them a task. We should be able to predict which countries are best at math simply by looking at which national cultures place the highest emphasis on effort and hard work. So which places are at the top of both lists? The answer shouldn't surprise you. Singapore, South Korea, China, Taiwan, Hong Kong, and Japan. What those five have in common, of course, is that they are all cultures shaped by the tradition of wet rice agriculture and meaningful work. They are the kinds of places where, for hundreds of years, penniless peasants, slaving away in the rice paddies 3,000 hours a year, would say things to each other like, "No one who can rise before dawn 360 days a year fails to make his family rich." Chapter 9. Marita's Bargain. All my friends are from Kip. In the mid-1990s, an experimental public school called the Kip Academy opened on the fourth floor of Lou Gehrig Junior High School in New York City. Lou Gehrig is in the 7th school district, otherwise known as the South Bronx, one of the poorest neighborhoods in New York City. It's a squat, gray, 1960s-era building across the street from a bleak collection of high-rises. A few blocks over is Grand Concourse, the borough's main thoroughfare. These are not streets that you'd happily walk down alone after dark. Kip is a middle school. Classes are large. The fifth grade has two sections of 35 students each. There are no entrance exams or admissions requirements. Students are chosen by lottery, with any fourth grader living in the Bronx eligible to apply. Roughly half of the students are African American, the rest Hispanic. Three-quarters of the students come from single-parent homes. 90% qualify for free or reduced lunch, which is to say that their families earn so little that the federal government chips in so they can eat properly at lunchtime.